I'm going to call this meeting to order because we have a full agenda, well, at least as far as testifiers are concerned. So if you could please bring down the noise over there, that would be great. This meeting of the Government Operations Committee is called to order. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum. The first motion of business is the approval of minutes from the January 22nd meeting. May I have a motion for approval of the minutes?
Mr. Chair, move for approval of the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Moves approval. Any discussions, comments, corrections, so forth? Okay. All those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, the motion prevails. We have approved our minutes. The first order of business is House File 13. Representative Kunesh Padin, if you'd like to come down and present your bill. And just to give members a kind of an outline of how I'd like this to go here, we have, I think, last count, 9 or 10 people who have signed up to speak in favor of this bill, a couple who have signed up in opposition to it to testify. I want to make sure both sides have equal time, so I am going to impose time limits here on the testimony. So especially, this is particularly more of an issue, at least based on the numbers, for the people testifying in favor of the bill. So if we get to about, I'll try to give warnings periodically. I understand they're keeping their testimony short, which I appreciate, but if we do get close to 20 minutes, I will cut off the testimony on that side. So just wanted to make that clear. And Representative Kunesh Padin, I will move that House File 13 be recommended for re-referral to the Ways and Means Committee. We do have a couple guests here. Representative Cagle, I know your guest has been here before. Representative Gomez, would you like to introduce your guest?
Oh, yeah. This is my son, Andre. He's 6. He is off of school today, so he's kind enough to join us.
Thank you for joining us, Andre. I have a 6-year-old as well. I really appreciate you being here. I'd like to check out your Legos maybe when this is over, too. Representative Kunesh Padin, please speak to your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and members. I'm happy to be here. I'm State Representative Mary Kunesh Padin, and I am here to move House File 13 onto making it a referendum on our ballot in 2020. So I think that we can all agree, all of us here, that that women and men should be treated equally under the law. And I'm here today to ensure that that protection is guaranteed in Minnesota through a constitutional amendment voted on by Minnesota voters. And it's time to get this done. Already over 20 states have a state ERA amendment in their constitution. And I can't tell you how surprised I was when I found out that Minnesota does not or has not been a leader in this effort. The problem lies here with our legislature. Over 90% of Americans agree that we should have an equal rights amendment in our state constitutions. So our voter approval is not the problem here. I'm asking you to give Minnesotans the voting right to voice their opinion and include this amendment, this referendum, in our 2020 ballot. An equal rights amendment to amend our state constitution to read, equality under the law shall not be abridged or denied on account of gender. So at this time, Chair, I would like to give a number of testifiers who have worked tirelessly on this effort the opportunity to support this proposed legislation.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh Padin. You had mentioned that you were interested in the committee considering a technical amendment. Could you please explain what that is?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, in the bill on line 1.11, it states, if ratified, the amendment is effective January 1st, 2020. I would like that amended to the date of 2021.
Okay, I just to be sure, I reviewed the rules. It does say minor oral amendments may be accepted during hearings. A written copy of minor oral amendments must be given to the committee legislative assistant during the hearing. Yes, Representative Zerwas, I was going to ask if this is acceptable to your side.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, looking over the language and seeing that the change is only changing, directly changing the effective date by 1 year, I think you're well within your ability as the chair to accept that type of oral amendment. The minority would have no issue with that.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Zerwas. I appreciate your willingness to do that, and obviously I will follow that rule when it comes to dates throughout this hearing, because that does seem like the type of correction that this provision in the rules was designed to address. So if you could make sure, just to be consistent with the rules, that you provide a copy of that to Colette here during the hearing, that would be great.
We will do that.
House Research, do you have everything you need on the amendment? Okay. All right. All in favor of the technical amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. The ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. So
Thank you. So
we're on to testimony then.
All right. I don't have the list in front of me. Do you have the list of folks to call?
Yes. Although you might have a preferred order. Okay, yeah. Why don't you come forward and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, all. My name is Lisa Stratton, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you today on behalf of this bill. To give you a little quick background on myself, I'm a graduate of the University of Minnesota Law School and a former member of its faculty, and the co-founder of a nonprofit that is dedicated to eliminating gender barriers. I also have consistently litigated cases of gender discrimination since 1997, and my job here today is to provide you with a legal perspective on why we need an equal rights amendment to the Minnesota Constitution. As I think everyone is aware, the only explicit right to gender equality in either the state or the federal constitution is women's hard-fought right to vote that was included in the U.S. Constitution by way of the 19th Amendment. This creates a situation where a then-sitting justice of the United States Supreme Court could say, as recently as 2011 and still true today, according to this viewpoint, certainly the Constitution does not require discrimination on the basis of sex. The only issue is whether it prohibits it. It doesn't. At present, this statement could also be made about the Minnesota Constitution, which brings us here today. What difference might a state equal rights amendment make? Enshrining the basic principle of gender equality in the Minnesota Constitution would make it clear that the citizens of this state expect its courts to apply a very high level of scrutiny to laws that create or reinforce gender disparities. It would make it clear that such laws have to be justified by a compelling state interest and must be found to be necessary to achieve it. This standard would simply place gender equality on the same footing as racial and religious equality. At present, under the federal standard, which is called intermediate scrutiny and is sort of in the eye of the beholder, the government's interest to justify a sex-based disparity only has to be important, and the law under review has to be substantially related to that interest. Obviously, a much wider scope of gender disparities caused by law could be tolerated under this so-called intermediate scrutiny that the United States Supreme Court uses to measure gender equality under our laws federally. The ERA here in Minnesota, number two, would create a backdrop to the sort of hodgepodge of anti-discrimination laws we currently have in our state. And I could talk more about what we do and don't have, but that's the bottom line. And it's important to remember that an ERA based on gender equality would protect men as well as women from laws and policies grounded in unfounded gender stereotypes. As a law professor noted in the film Equal Means Equal, which I greatly hope that some of you, if not all, have seen, he said, the ERA, and I think this is important, it's not just a women's rights amendment, it's an equal rights amendment. Men would also benefit from the principle of gender equality, especially when it comes to their families, and their relationships with their children. Another reason, the ERA would give this legislature clear guidance for future legislation and a mandate from the citizenry. It would be another tool for advocates to use to attack the remaining manifestations of gender inequality in our state, which are many and are profound, as I believe other testifiers will share with you. Finally, a Minnesota ERA would continue the great tradition, which actually brought me to Minnesota as my adopted state, of Minnesota serving as an example of global leadership on women's human rights and gender equality. It is often used as an excuse by federal legislators that we cannot have a federal ERA because the federal government cannot mandate to the states that it take action with respect to the state laws. And international conventions, that is the norm. The government must guarantee all levels of government will comply with gender equality. So let's remove that as an impediment to the United States not remaining one of the only seven countries in the entire world that has not ratified the International Bill of Women's Rights. No one can predict exactly what effect at this moment the addition of an ERA to our state constitution would have. But I can say with confidence it would not be immediate, it would be incremental, and it would happen as a result of legal challenges. And those challenges would invoke a very deliberate process of evaluation governed by rules of evidence and procedure. It is a broad statement of principle, a goal by which...
We are at 5 minutes, just so you're aware.
Ooh, so sorry. Okay. I then will wrap. I don't want to take away from other testifiers. We have been a leader in Minnesota on women's equality in many different ways. I urge this committee to continue that track record and pass House File 13. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stratton.
And.
Okay, if we could maybe not do applause here, it's not really appropriate for this setting. Thank you.
And now, with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'll call up our next witness.
Sure.
Okay. Jetty Ann Hill from the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees will be next.
Thank you, Ms. Hill.
Thank you. To the chair and the members of the committee, I'd first like to say that thank you for your consideration and the opportunity to testify before you this morning. My name is Jetty Ann Hill. And I'd like to, I am here today to tell you that I am a 26-year employee of the state of Minnesota at the Office of Ombudspersons for Families. I'm a proud MATE member, and I'm a co-chair of the Government Relations Committee. I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother, I'm a friend, I'm a neighbor. I'm a community activist. I'm a survivor of Jim Crow laws. And sometimes I'm tired, I'm just tired. I'm an elder in my community, and I stand on the shoulders of many who've come to you before me. And I'm here today to say that the time is now. The time is now for Minnesota to begin to close the gap and intersection between race and gender by adding the ERA amendment to the state constitution. This is personal to me because when I look at Minnesota and Minnesota's data on the status of Black, Brown, American Indian, and other women of color, I know we can do better and I know we must. The time is now. Whether it's economics, safety, incarceration, health, or leadership, our women continue to be victims of poor outcomes and injustices. For instance, economics. It is well documented that Black, Latino, American Indian, and other women of color in Minnesota face complex economic inequities, and that more training and education does not lead to the same economic payoff as men. Health. Minnesota data shows persistent health disparities for Black and American Indian women that's complicated by historical trauma or in our communities. Research now shows that systemic racism along with rigid gender norms are having serious mental and physical health consequences for these women. In Minnesota, low birth rates for babies and infant mortality rates continue to be a major concern if the mother identifies as Black, African American, Asian, or Pacific Islander. The Women's Foundation of Minnesota reported in 2018 that African-American women have felt emotionally upset, sad, and frustrated, and as a result of how they are treated based on their race. The elder female population in Minnesota is also susceptible to these emotional strains of loneliness and anxiety. According to that report, improving well-being and safety outcomes for women of color and women in greater Minnesota should be one of our priorities. Leadership. I want to acknowledge that in leadership, we've made some progress, and I'm keeping hope alive that for the future. But we must be diligent and intentional, because the arc may bend toward a just society, but it doesn't happen on its own. We still have a long way to go in the public, corporate, and judicial sectors. So we're at a crossroads here in Minnesota history. We just celebrated the life and legacy of a man and a movement that chose to be bold, that chose to be courageous, that demanded radical change to ensure freedom and liberty for all. Inequities continue to threaten our democracy now and in the future, and the future that we're planning for our children and our grandchildren. Let's show the people of Minnesota and the people of this great nation that we value progress, we value equality. There's too much at stake for us not to embrace the opportunity to legally guarantee equality. So I ask that you support Minnesota State ERA Amendment to our state constitution. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Hill. Uh-huh. We are at 9.5 minutes, just so you're aware.
And I will interview
you can just let, yeah, okay. People can introduce themselves, okay, as they come forward. That's the way it's typically done. Thank you. Thank you. If you could just please state your name for the record.
My name is Ping Tao. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify for you this morning. I want to say that we live in a culture that assumes that gender equity and equality exists here in the state of Minnesota in our society because of the few examples of women who are able to achieve and become leaders and elected officials, along with becoming CEOs and whatnot. But that is far from creating a society that has gender equality. The fact is that we still have a high rate of women and girls being impacted by violence. This still says that we are far from gender equality. 1 in 3 women and girls in Minnesota will have experienced or will experience gender violence in their lifetime. In my 15 years of work in the field of trauma and violence, both at the state, local, national, and international level, including domestic violence, sexual violence, and sex trafficking, as a trainer, as a mental health practitioner, as a program director, and a direct service provider, I know that this to be true based on the work that I have, particularly with the work of men who've committed sex offenses and domestic violence. Many of the men that go through these programs, domestic violence programs, sex offender programs, share deeply held beliefs about how men are supposed to be and how they're supposed to relate to women and girls. These men are just a mere reflection of the larger problem of gender equality. We live in a culture where we are still teaching our boys and young men rigid ideas about manhood, being dominant, strong-willed, emotionless, etc. And the women and girls, are still there to serve their needs. For example, we have asked men why they use violence toward their partner, and after some exploration, a majority of them understand not to hit women. But they realize that choosing violence towards their partner is because they know they can hit women and get away with it, or because it is their right to do so. This comes from the belief that men are to be in charge and because they are the head of their households. My son came home a few months ago with this rhyme, and he's only 7. Boys go to college to get more knowledge, and girls go to Jupiter to get more stupider. Both of these examples demonstrate that there are still ideas about women and girls in places in society and where they belong taught at a very young age. The Women's Foundation's 2018 report on the status of women and girls in Minnesota says that on any one given day, Minnesota providers serve an estimated 2,400 victims of domestic violence. Most, if not all of these are women. The report also says that the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, estimates that there are 684,000 women in Minnesota in a year who are survivors of rape, physical violence, and stalking. What does this translate to? Target Field has about 39,000 seats. That means filling that stadium up to 17 times. Many survivors of gender violence have access to relief and protections, but still many do not. And if they're able to access these protections, they have to continuously prove that they are not the ones who are participating in their own victimization, and that they have to resist the violence. So in order to end or at least curb these violent acts, behaviors, and deeply held beliefs about women and girls, the culture must change. Therefore, we strongly ask that Minnesota become a state that allows for full gender equality under the law where it is just not assumed. Thank you.
Thank you. We are at 13 minutes.
Hello, Mr. Chair, Board. My name is Trista Mattis Castillo, and I'm here to testify on the enormous importance of passing the Equal Rights Amendment and the lasting significance of the vote that is before you. Like many in our society, I'm known as much by the titles I've been given as by my actions and my accomplishments. I'm a lifelong Minnesotan, a proud descendant of the farmlands in central Minnesota. I'm a wife and mother of five boys. I'm a former first lieutenant in our nation's armed forces, serving in three branches over 16 years. I'm a survivor of military sexual assault, which led to the birth of my severely disabled child. I'm a local elected official serving on the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners. But most of all, I am known by the title that was given to me at birth, the title which has defined and limited so many of my opportunities I've had throughout my life, the title of woman. To be a woman in this country is to know at every stage of your life and in every pursuit you undertake that your actions, your successes, and failures will be understood primarily through the lens of your gender. When I served in the military, I was the first woman in almost every job I held. I was proud to blaze a trail that others could follow. But if I'm honest, I never asked to serve as an exemplar of my gender, but only to serve. They call that a privilege, but it would be a far greater privilege to live in a world where women did not need to prove their worth of their gender to earn the respect given as a matter of course to men. When I was raped by a fellow service member during my officer training program, I knew the consequences and judgments I would face if I reported, and it would have a permanent impact on my career. So I stayed quiet for nearly 10 years. I knew because I had heard the things said about other women who reported that they couldn't lead if they couldn't protect themselves, that somehow they knew the risk of the job, that it would be our fault to be in a situation in which a man would be tempted or provoked to rape. It sounds absurd, but that harsh reality is still true today. In public service, we hear all the time the words of our nation's founding fathers and illustrious statesmen. Often my mind returns to the words of Abraham Lincoln, who declared America to be a land dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. We have trained ourselves not to hear that word men except as a universal, a description not of a gender but of mankind. Yet the nation they brought forth on this continent was one governed not by consent of all the people, but of men alone. And although the work of many generations before us have brought women closer to the ideal, our laws and our society still enshrine inequality in the deed, if not in word. It's for this reason that it is so important for you to advance this amendment. The search for true equality before the law is the great effort of American history, the singular thread that runs through so many of our nation's seminal moments. Our Constitution is the truest and most lasting statement of our fundamental values. And it is not only fitting, but crucial that equality for all be enshrined there. It is only by these means that we can live up to our rhetoric and build a future all our children can survive and thrive in. Thank you.
Thank you for your powerful testimony, Commissioner Mattis Castillo. We are at almost 16 and a half minutes, just so you're aware, so there will only be 3.5 more minutes for testimony in favor. If you could please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. Ruben Vasquez. Good morning, committee. I speak before you not only as a representative of an organization whose mission is to eliminate racism and empower women and young girls, but more importantly, I speak to you as a father. A father of two children, Isaiah, who is 14, and Jasmine, who is 11. Both of these kids are smart, kind, with lots of opinions, resilient, and very persistent. A few years ago, when I worked at a different organization, we were at the end of our annual fundraising campaign. 2 days before the end of that campaign, I was discussing this at the dinner table. My daughter Jasmine asked me, "Papa, why do you need to raise so much money?" I told her that by raising this money, it would give us an opportunity to fight the fights that we needed to fight. She asked for clarification on what this meant. I used the following example. I told her, honey, both you and your brother want to become engineers. Both you and your brother want to attend MIT. You are both smart, and I am sure you will both be very successful. Yet, we currently have a system that does not pay equitably. So simply because you are a woman, you will get paid less than your brother for doing the same type of work. She responded by saying, well, that's stupid. I said, yes, honey, it is stupid. That is why we need this money, so that we can fight this fight and ensure that everyone gets paid the same for the same type of work. If an 8-year-old girl can realize this inequity, how is it that we, as adults, refuse to fix this problem? How is it that it is 2019 and we are still having this discussion? Both my son and daughter looked at each other. They both simultaneously got up from the dinner table, went into their bedrooms, and came back with their piggy banks. They offered me the money that had saved, a total combined savings of $23. I said, no, I am not asking for your money. My daughter said to me, you need to take this money. We want to be a part of this fight. That night, as I put my son to bed, he said to me, Papa, I feel bad that I am a boy. And because of that reason, I will have more opportunities than my sister. This experience I share with you is an example of how this inequity is dehumanizing everyone. Women have continuously fought for the same right as their male counterparts, while some men, like my son, will continue to feel guilty for gaining privileges solely on the assigned gender he received at birth. According to the Minnesota Constitutional Amendment for Equity Coalition, currently, the courts hold sex and gender discrimination to a lower standard than discrimination based on race, religion, or national origin. I urge this committee, this legislature, this governor, this state, to stop talking about how unfair inequity based on sex and gender is and start taking some real action. Not only for the sake of my children, but for the sake of our younger generation. I ask you to approve House File 13. Let's truly make this a better one, Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vasquez. We are out of time for testimony in favor of the amendment. I do have two people on the agenda that I believe are going to speak with to express some concerns. If they don't take the full 20 minutes, I can open it up to more on that side. Andrea Rao from MCCL. Thank you. If you could please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Andrea Rao, and I am here representing Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life. We are Minnesota's oldest and largest pro-life organization. And I really thank you for allowing me to explain pro-life concerns with the Equal Rights Amendment as presented in committee today. Many pro-lifers, myself included, are strong supporters of equal rights. In fact, that is the reason we are pro-life. We believe that all humans, regardless of circumstance, race, gender, religious belief, disability, age, stage of development, sexual orientation, or any other difference, should all be afforded equal rights under the law. However, equal rights amendments have a history of discriminating against less developed humans, those yet to be born. And we do object to this. Equal rights amendments have been used in multiple states to rule as unconstitutional various pro-life laws. I won't go into all the details, but I do have information if the committee would like that. Attempts to invalidate pro-life laws continue based on equal rights amendments. Just last week, Pennsylvania's prohibition on taxpayer-funded abortion was challenged in court by Planned Parenthood and others. According to the press release of the Women's Law Project, quote, Its central claims are that the abortion coverage ban violates the Equal Rights Amendment and equal protection provisions of the Pennsylvania Constitution. MCCL has long encouraged the legislature to simply make ERAs abortion neutral. The committee does have an amendment here today available to do just that, and we would urge the adoption of that language either today in committee or on the House floor. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Rao. Is there anyone else who I do have Meredith Campbell from the Family Council here, but I have a note that says you may provide only written testimony. You're certainly welcome to speak if you wish. I'm not seeing anybody come forward. Is there anybody else who would like to speak in opposition or with concerns? Oh. Are you coming forward? Okay, no, you're just walking across. Okay. I mean, if members on both sides are okay, I'll close the testimony then. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I apologize. Thank you. And if you could please say your name for the record.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Deborah Fitzpatrick. I co-direct the Center on Women, Gender, and Public Policy at the Humphrey School, the University of Minnesota. And in partnership with the Women's Foundation of Minnesota, I produced the report that was referenced by many prior testifiers.
Quick question, Ms. Fitzpatrick. Are you speaking in favor of the legislation before us?
I'm here to provide information about the continuing disparities in the state, and I think the Equal Rights Amendment is one tool that the state should consider in terms of addressing those ongoing disparities.
That sounds pretty much like it's in favor to
yes.
me. I was pretty clear yes. about the time limit here.
I thought that we were moving.
Oh, it's okay. I appreciate it. If you could please make sure copies of that are available. Are they in?
I think there's two okay. versions, actually, a black and white one, and then I hand it around.
Okay. I appreciate it. I apologize for the time. We're trying to be efficient here because this is a very important issue. I know a lot of people want to speak.
And Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Zerwas.
You know, as far as I'm concerned for our side, I mean, it's your committee to run and to manage the clock and make sure we get out of here on time. However, as far as we're concerned, if there are a few more folks that have signed up ahead of time and have waited throughout the hearing and would like to provide testimony, we would have no concern or issue with that. But obviously you're the chair and can run the committee at your discretion.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. I appreciate you're a very gracious ranking member on this committee, which I appreciate. I'll allow a little latitude for you to maybe talk for a minute. I do want to make sure we do have an amendment here. I suspect there will be questions about it, and I want to be respectful of members' time as well. So, I want to make sure we have as much time as we need to discuss the amendment.
Sure.
So, if you have any concluding thoughts, please.
Super brief. Sure. First of all, I just want to make the point that discrimination, I think, is an economic inefficiency that our state can't afford. With severe and growing labor shortages, we can't afford to leave any talent on the sidelines. I also provided a report that I've done looking at the impact of young women in our economy and the importance of them to our economy. There are almost 50,000 young women aged 23 to 30 that are not currently in our paid labor force in the state of Minnesota. 72% of those young women have education beyond high school. And while these young women are doing their part to get educated, incurring disproportionate levels of student debt, this really has not translated into economic parity. Many people have already talked about ongoing economic inequities between men and women, and particularly for women of color in the state. These inequities are hurting our state and its families. Increasingly, Minnesota women are the primary breadwinner in their family, and over time, their earnings have become an instrumental part of economic stability for most families. Yet, pay inequities persist in our state at every stage of a woman's career, and shortchanging them, but also their families and their children. So while the ERA is not the only solution or overt discrimination, the only cause, it is certainly one important part of the picture, and I think the ERA at the state and federal level would be an important tool to continue to address that. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzpatrick. I'm going to close the public testimony portion of this hearing. Is there any member discussion before we move to amendments? Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, to the author, Representative Kunesh-Pudin. We've had some advocates from MCCL and some other groups approach members with concerns about ERA amendments and state constitutions being used as kind of hooks for litigation around expanding abortion access or payments for abortion in other states, as recently as the lawsuit being filed in Pennsylvania just last week, and with the Equal Rights Amendment in the Pennsylvania Constitution being cited as legal basis for the claim. And so I'm just trying to see where you're coming from. I think I know on the basis in the broad scope of your bill and your push, I fully support it. I fully support the ERA amendment. I fully support the efforts that you're trying to codify in law and in the Constitution. My concern as someone that is devoutly Catholic and pro-life, I don't want to end up supporting something that down the road is used as a justification to expand abortion access in the state of Minnesota. I know not everyone shares my faith view, and that's all right. But I just kind of wanted to have a moment to talk with you about kind of what your hopes are for the legislation moving through, what your hopes are for the ballot measure, and if your intention in getting this placed in the Minnesota State Constitution is to increase access or broaden the instances of Medicaid payments for abortion in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Kunesh-Pudin.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Zerwas. Actually, that is not my intention at all. It is absolutely not the intention of this ERA amendment. In fact, it was not even a consideration of mine until I heard about the amendment that was added to this bill. And at first, of course, I was confused, like, what does this have to do with that? Mm-hmm. And through a very careful explanation of why this amendment is not only unnecessary, but, I actually, questioned the germaneness. I mean, what does this have to do with asking for equality for women and men? It has nothing to do with abortion rights. It has nothing to do with increasing funding for abortion that is already a protected constitutional right in our Minnesota Constitution. And so that is not my intent at all.
Representative Zerwas?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So being that it's not your intent, would you be okay with adding the comfort language here in committee today so that our members feel comfortable moving forward with the bill? We'd love to join with you and support this if you're willing to take the language in the A2 amendment.
Representative Kunesh-Pudin.
Representative Zerwas, no, I would rather you would not add this to this bill. I'd like to keep a clean bill, an ERA bill that we can all be proud of saying we passed here in Minnesota, that we're joining the other states that have already added this amendment. I think we all know that our politics get kind of messy and we like to muddy the waters and we like to get our own agenda attached to other bills in order to push our agenda. And so I would not support the amendment to this bill.
Representative Zerwas.
Yeah, what's the bill path laid out before us for the bill?
Since it is a constitutional amendment, there is a cost to it, so the motion is to refer it to Ways and Means, where I assume it will go to it will be referred to the State Government Finance Division.
All right. Mr. Chair, based on the testimony of the bill author, I think I'm going to move to amend the motion to refer the bill to the Health and Human Service Policy Committee. This will have a direct impact on health care policy here in the state of Minnesota. It will be the proper purview of that committee, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. The chair of the Health and Human Services Policy Committee has not requested this bill from me, so I would encourage, I don't think we need to do this. I think we should send this as planned to the State Government Finance Division. Okay, I apologize. Representative Zerwas, did you want further discussion on this, or?
I thought you said, in one breath you said the original motion was to refer it to Ways and Means, and then your closing remarks, you just said that you would prefer it be referred to State Gov Finance.
And so
that's what got me.
Okay, I apologize. This new committee structure is taking a little bit of time to get used to, your side can attest to. As I said in my initial comments, my assumption is it will go to the State Government Finance Division once referred to Ways and Means. So I've not heard any request from the health policy chair that this bill should go there. So I guess I would encourage members just to stick with the motion as originally made.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, at this point, my intention is not to offer the A2 amendment in committee here. I think there'll be a robust discussion on the floor about the A2 amendment, and what we've seen in other states, there's been, I think, now a half dozen lawsuits in the last 27 years trying to expand abortion access in the states that have ERA amendments in their state constitution, using that ERA language as a hook for the litigation. For that reason, I think it is germane to the bill. There's a lot of us that support what you're going after, and there's lots of us that support the underlying concerns that so many of the testifiers discussed, but would feel very conflicted voting for something that in multiple states in the last several years have been used to expand abortion access in the United States.
Is there any further member discussion? Representative Bonner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kunesh-Podein, I just want to thank you for the testimony as well as that of the folks here today, both in favor and in favor of the amendment. Really appreciate your time today. Just a really quick question. Based on this particular amendment, if this amendment were to be attached, can you explain to me what would be the ramifications, or would this amendment be challenged because of the legal statutes of Minnesota, which already allow for legal access to abortion?
Representative Bonner, before Representative Kunesh-Podein answers, I did hear Representative Zerwas at least say it was not his intention to offer the amendment. It's sort of a moot point. Did you still want an answer to that question?
I would love to hear the answer, yes.
Okay, Representative Kunesh-Podein, if you could keep it brief since it's not really before us at this point.
I guess what I would assume is that this ERA bill would be held up. It could possibly be withdrawn with that amendment attached to it. We have to remember that I want to just share that that the Minnesota Supreme Court has ruled in 1995 in its decision Doe versus Gomez that abortion is already a protected right, constitutional right in Minnesota, and that if we are going to use this ERA legislation as a tool to move other agendas, then we would prefer that we keep it a clean bill, a bill that honors the women and the men that have worked so hard for decades to ensure that we have gender equity under law. And so I can only imagine what would happen should that amendment go through connected to this ERA bill.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein. Is there any further member discussion? Okay. Not seeing any, the motion is to re-refer House File 13 as amended, as there was the technical amendment, to the Ways and Means Committee. All those...
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Zerwas?
Mr. Chair, I did make a motion to re-refer the bill to Health and Human Service policy. I believe the procedure would be for a vote to occur on that.
Okay.
And then for if for some reason that vote didn't pass, then I think the procedure would be to go on with your original motion, Mr. Chair.
I apologize. I sort of interpreted your silence after the comment before as a withdrawal of that motion. So yes, the motion then is on Representative Zerwas's amended motion or proposed amendment to re-refer this to the Health Policy Committee. As I said before, I would encourage members to vote no on this. I think this should follow the original path as intended to Ways and Means. So all those in favor of the Zerwas motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The noes have it. So thank you for your efforts, Representative Zerwas. Okay, so the bill, the original motion to re-refer the bill as amended to the Ways and Means Committee is before us. Seeing no further discussion, could all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Thank you, Representative Kanesh Padin. Your bill is on its way.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members.
And then there's no need, please no applause. We still have more business to attend to, so we don't want to hold this up with applause. So the next item on the agenda is House File 71. Is Representative Moran in the audience? Thank you, Representative Moran. I think given where we are in the agenda, the fact that we've already had some discussion, I don't anticipate we'll need time limits on this, but I will maybe set a maximum of 10 minutes. So I guess that is a time limit in essence. So thank you. I let Representative Moran, I should let you introduce the bill first.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I want to thank you for the opportunity to come before you to present House File 71. So this bill contains a resolution to Congress requesting that Congress remove the deadline for state ratification of equal rights of the Equal Rights Amendment, a U.S. constitutional amendment proposal that was first submitted to the states for ratification in 1972. A number of the arguments in support of the resolution are contained in the bill. My comment is that we need full constitutional protection of the legal system to combat discrimination of all genders. And now is the time to finally ensure that all citizens have equal access to justice across Minnesota and across the country. The lack of an equal rights amendment, which will prohibit the discrimination on the basis of sex, is especially harmful to women of color who face discrimination both on the basis of sex and the basis of race. With this amendment, it will correct the statement in our Constitution that all men are created equal, to thus state that all men and women are created equal, and thus means that all people are created equal. So some of our top priorities, reasons for this gender equality are stopping inequities for women of color, pay equity, gender violence, and equal access to justice in the courts.
Okay. Thank you. All right, thank you. And I apologize, I forgot the motion on this one, I believe, is to re-refer House File 71 to the General Register. Okay, so.
Does that mean I need to start all over again?
No, that's not necessary. You're the second person to ask me that when I made that exact mistake on another bill. So you're in good company. So, well, welcome to the committee. If you could please just identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, thank you for having us. This is Betty Folliard. I am the founder of ERA Minnesota, and I really appreciate all the members listening to us today. Thank you very much. I'm also a former state representative for those who don't know me. So, Mr. Chair and members, this is a simple bill asking Congress to remove the deadline on the Equal Rights Amendment. So, you know, it's the therefore in that. The whereas is all the explanation. And why do we still need an ERA?
because women make on average 80%, 80 cents to a man's dollar, with much, much larger inequities for women of color, because twice as many women as men over the age of 65 live in poverty, because two-thirds of minimum wage earners are women, because only 3% of rapists will ever see a night in jail, because we're still fighting the battle for voting rights for all, because 1 in 5 college women will experience sexual assault, because women still get fired for being pregnant, because child care can cost more than college these days, because some bosses deny workers birth control coverage, because we're one of only 3 countries in the industrialized world that have no paid maternity leave, because women can fight and die for their country and they still don't have equal rights, and because women are not willing to wait another 243 years for equality. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Folliard. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this one? Yes, please come to the table and state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Committee. My name is Amy Cockett, and I drove down up from Rochester this morning in a whiteout, so thank you for letting me have a chance to talk.
Thank you. I should have made sure that I apologize. I forgot to check if anyone had driven a long distance.
I think this says it all. Yeah. ERA, part of America. And here it is. If you look at the word America, ERA is in it. This is from the League of Women Voters, and I'm wearing the sash, and I have my Homer Hankey from 1978, which on the day of the Great Flood in Rochester, I and a friend and our daughters left to go to the ERA Extension March in Washington, D.C. The main thing I wanted to leave you with is don't give up on the ERA. Women's rights take a long time. 72 years since the Seneca Falls Convention in 1848 until we won the right to vote in 1920. Another 49 years for Congress to pass the ERA when it was first introduced in 1923. And now we're at the point where it's been 47 years since Congress sent it to the states, and we're one state away. So please support what Representative Moran is doing to memorialize Congress to get rid of the 10-year limit on the ERA. People say, why? And I say, why ever not? Equal rights is what America and Minnesota are about. And I'm just going to leave you one fact about how Minnesota was once very progressive in this area as I'm researching how we got the suffrage in this state. In the legislature of 1870, passed a constitutional amendment allowing women to vote. They took the word male out of the electorate. And unfortunately, the governor, Governor Austin, vetoed that after the 60-day legislature went home. We would have been the first state to have approved voting for women. So thank you very much.
Thank
the League
you,
of
Ms.
Women
Cockett.
Voters really supports this.
Sure. Thank you, Ms. Cockett. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak in favor of House File 71, particularly anybody who drove a long distance and didn't get a chance to speak on House File 13? Yes. Yeah. I did schedule these so that the bills were on a similar topic. So,
Rosemary Rocco, Maple Grove. It wasn't a whiteout; it was a crawl.
I know.
So, this will be for me the 36th year of coming before this body and others to ask for my equality. The very basic demonstration of inequality is that in all that time I spoke to panels like this in which men were the majority. It has taken over that time working for women to be elected to bring some balance. I live in 34B. Seems to me a lot of work to get my basic rights. I would encourage you to pass House File 71. Adding that to your action already taken, I thank you. I'm going to add one fact into the issue about pay. If we were to pay women of all colors equal to men, simply do that, it would add $200 billion into the economy every year. Quite an economic stimulus package in the bargain. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rocco. Is there, we're at about approaching 6 minutes. Is there anybody else who would like to speak on House File 71? Okay, seeing none, is there any member discussion about House File 71? It seems pretty straightforward. We don't generally do these resolutions. I don't intend on doing a whole lot, but I think on this is such an important topic, and considering we've already discussed this at the state level, it seems like an important thing to move forward with.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Moran, for your leadership on this. Are there any member comments? Closing remarks, Representative Moran? Oh, Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Moran. Just out of curiosity on a sort of a technical question, how many amendments in the history of the United States have ever had an arbitrary deadline?
I'm sorry. Please repeat the question.
I said, can you tell me, please, in the history of the United States, how many amendments have had an arbitrary deadline placed upon them?
Representative Moran, I think the answer is it one or zero. yes,
Mr.
if
Chair.
You could, former Representative Folliard.
Thank you. The answer to that, up until the time that it was passed by the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate in 1972, only two amendments by that time had ever had a deadline put on it. The deadline was put in the preface of the bill. It's not in the language that's passed through 25 states now. Through 37 states in the nation. But by that time, there were only two. The other one was some obscure amendment. I can't refer to it offhand. But, so only two, and one of them was women's rights.
Representative Bonner?
Thank you for that. One follow-up question to that. So it is one of only two in our history that's ever had a deadline placed upon it. So I'm just curious, is there precedent to indicate why this deadline should be dropped?
Yes.
Former Representative Folliard?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think it's the Madison Amendment was first written in the 1700s, and it took 203 years to pass, and it didn't pass till 2003. So it was up until 1972, there were only two. There have been some subsequently to that. But yes, there is precedent to say that it's still a timely issue. It should still be considered.
Representative Bonner?
Mr. Chair, Betty, and Chair Moran, or Representative Moran, thank you. I think what I wasn't perhaps clear. I believe that there has been discussion that the reason that this sunset clause should be removed is that it was determined to be an arbitrary date because it was already extended at one point in time. And I believe there's significant case law to prove that out. Could you just speak to that briefly?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, it was first given only 7 years to pass, and then Congress extended it. Congress has the power to extend the deadline, to remove the deadline. They can do whatever they want, and it's a simple majority vote in Congress to get that done.
Okay. Representative Bonner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative
Quam. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would staff be able to supply us the Supreme Court decision when the five states did the rescinding and the court case proceeded through? The Supreme Court made a decision on both the deadline and this topic. I think it would be good reference material for us to have that provided, since the U.S. Supreme Court is probably considered somewhat of an authority.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Folliard.
Mr. Chair and Representative, five states rescinded, and there is precedent at the Supreme Court level about not being allowed to rescind an amendment after the fact, because the 14th Amendment After the 14th Amendment was written and passed through in 1868, two states rescinded their ratification, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And in both cases, the Supreme Court stated that you cannot rescind a ratification after the fact. Those are their words.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Pollyer. Just to Representative Quam's question, I'll call you back. So, Mr. Gehring, I assume, just assuming you're familiar with the Supreme Court decision that Representative Quam is referencing, would you be able to just send it to Colette and myself, and then we can forward it to committee members? I think that was Representative Quam's request.
Mr. Chair, I requested, because the actual Supreme Court decision was on the ERA, and you know, I figured it would be good reference for the committee as a whole to have that. So my request was that staff provide the members of the committee that Supreme Court decision in the background, so we could be more fully informed.
Yeah.
And that's independent of whose opinion is what. I just think, as a reference, Supreme Court decisions on the exact topic we're talking about would be good material for us.
Sure. Representative Quam, I have no problem providing that to committee members. So actually, and I'll just, if we have any issue identifying the specific Supreme Court decision you're mentioning, we may come to you and just ask for clarification. But provided we can find all that, I'll make sure it's distributed to. Oh, okay. Oh, yes, Mr. Gehring, would you like to say something on that point?
Sure. Mr. Chair and committee members, just for your reference, if you're interested in the procedure of amendments, we do have a House Research publication that I could give to anyone who's interested on the legal standards that apply to ratification process. One thing just to clarify about the rescissions is that with the 14th Amendment, the Supreme Court case that dealt with rescissions in that case dealt with a rescission that occurred after the amendment had been fully ratified. Mm-hmm. And so the precedent that applies in this situation is a little bit different, because the ERA has not been fully ratified yet, and so no one has been granted rights under the amendment. Mm-hmm. So I think there isn't precedent to clarify one way or the other whether rescission would be effective for the ERA at this point. I'm not familiar with the specific Supreme Court case that deals with the ERA amendment, so like, I can look into it further and see if I can find it.
Okay. And, yeah, provided we're able to come up with that, Representative Quam, I have no problem supplying that to the committee. Thank you for your interest. I'm kind of having flashbacks to my second year of law school and my constitutional law class, but it's obviously, you know, it's an important issue, so I appreciate everyone's interest. Are there further member questions? Okay, the motion was to re-refer House File 71 to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Moran and Representative Pollyard. So the only that those are the two bills we're taking up today. On Tuesday's agenda, we will be discussing House File 140 related to Board of Cosmetology and House File 123 related to the Legislative Budget Office. Thank you, everybody. This has been a fun hearing. I thought it would go a lot longer than this. So we are adjourned.